This week on RSBNV Update, replayability of Sliske's endgame arrives, and we ask the same questions once more. Will our answers be the same? Also, more thoughts on the bank rework and combat action bars, as well as a discussion on programming. This is RSBNV Update, episode 656, recorded Thursday, February 1st, 2018. Tinfoil Hats. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNV Update once again. We're back this week with another fine episode, although if you guys are listening to this, you might think, oh, did I listen to this episode before? Well, it's entirely possible that you did, because that's what our update touches on, the replayability of Sliske's endgame. But nonetheless, Sirion is here with me this week. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, last time you were on was that clip show. Lots of
people
like that.
Oh, that was fun. That was fun.
Yeah. I think that's the first time the co-host of the clip show has lost it during a clip show.
Well, I'm glad to be setting precedents for future episodes.
Yeah, definitely. You guys might be wondering where Tanis is, but Tanis is out with the flu this week, unfortunately, so we hope he gets well soon and is ready to come back for next week. But in the meantime, we're going to discuss Sliske's endgame again. Yeah, because you and I and Colton was unable to be here due to scheduling. But the three of us, it was a couple days before Christmas. I believe it was the 22nd of December, 2016.
It was a cold winter night.
Was it cold? I don't know. It probably was cold here, but...
Yeah, probably not here.
We gathered and, you know, we discussed Sliske's endgame for 2.5 hours almost. And also...
that long?
Yeah, and also part of the Christmas event that year. And, you know, this was a very trying time for us because this quest came out and, you know, it was promised that it would come out in 2016. And last update of 2016, 5 days before Christmas, Sliske's endgame comes out. And it's like, okay, everyone is getting ready to go home for Christmas. The clip show is being produced and getting ready to be recorded. I wanted to do a special that year, but Sliske's endgame prevented that. So it was like, okay, so we got to do this quest. It's gonna take a couple hours, right? No. I think it took me 7.5 hours to do that quest.
I think it was like 6 hours for me or so.
Yeah. So there was that. And we're only going to touch on this once here, but when Endgame initially came out, it wasn't the most polished quest. There were some glitches and whatnot along the way in terms of interactions that ruined the lore and ruined the immersion, let's just say. So
I'm just surprised that the title of the episode didn't end up being like, ah!
Right? Right?
Because that was basically the entire quest.
Yeah. And, you know, I was even asking Earth if he wanted to come on for this episode because he has done Sliske's Endgame. And he was adamant that, no, I am not going in that maze again. And no, I am not doing that fight again. So this quest definitely has its feelings along the way. And, you know, I was hoping for more resolution with the replayability. But we'll get to that if I feel that way. I might be kind of leading a bit on that, but you guys will just have to wait and see with this. So, Sliske's endgame. Now, I'm assuming you skipped the puzzles in the maze.
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm not going back in there. Ever.
Yeah. So, you go talk to Rolomia in Draenor Village, and, you know, she has the option to replay Sliske's endgame, then you're presented with a series of choices. You know, you can replay the maze with interactions only, which is what you want to check in order to skip the puzzles. Because if you don't check that, you're going to have to do the whole damn thing. And, you know, after you tell her that you want to start playing this, you cannot go back and change your actions. So make sure you select your actions correctly on this page when you do it, because if not, you're going to be suffering in pain as you go through that maze.
You're going to have to make a new account, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, there's also an option that you can tick once to make this your canon playthrough if you want to change choices that you made. And not only choices that you made in Endgame, but choices leading up to all of the future or all of the previous quests in this arc. Which, you know, we were wondering what the choices were going to be. But when you saw this matrix, I mean, it seemed kind of simpler than it was led on to be, right? Because there's only around 7 changes that you can actually make here. Sorry, 8. 7 choices.
Yeah, I think it's a trick in storytelling, especially in interactive storytelling, is to create the illusion of choice and make it look like every time you respond to an inquiry, it changes the outcome. But it doesn't have to. Like, it's so much development time to get all the different outcomes implemented. So I'm not too surprised. I had hoped for more.
Yeah.
Because some of these choices don't look that they don't look that significant, basically. Right. Like, I had the feeling that it felt underwhelming to see the entire storyline sort of coming down to this list of toggles.
Right. Yeah. And the toggles are, of course, the Allegiance at Battle of Lumbridge, Ceridomen or Zamorak, Bird and the Beast, Armadillo or Bandos, Give Ceridomen the Wand and Death of Chivalry.
Yeah, it told that was me death I did of that.
Yeah, same.
It told me you did that. I'm like, I would probably not have given that Smurf a wand, to be honest.
And
so,
when was Death of Chivalry anyway? Was that was
Death of Chivalry was the quest with Sir Owen.
Oh right, okay. I was thinking of the one where they planted the bomb in Entrena.
No, right.
Okay. All right, never mind. Next choice, aid Zaro's return in Fate of the Gods. Did you do that?
Yes.
Yeah. And I did also give him the wand. Betrayed Zamorak in Dishonor Among Thieves to help Sliske. I did not do that.
I think I did. Okay. Do that. I don't remember.
Sacrifice Elenid in The Light Within.
It told me I didn't do that, even though I remember I did.
Okay. Yeah, you're the second person to say.
I had a discussion about this on the episode where I think I did and you didn't, or the other way around. I don't even know.
Yeah, and you know, you're not the. There are other people who believe that they sacrificed Elunid or did not in that quest, but this checkbox said otherwise. So that there is something going on there, maybe with the way the choice was presented.
Mm-hmm.
Use the Dark Shard to restore Saren also in The Light Within. I did not.
I did.
Okay. And Death Kills Gilenor in Nomad's Requiem.
I did not. I made Eklavan do it.
Right, same. So those are the choices you can make. Now...
It felt a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, seeing it like this, is this really all the Sixth Age is coming down to at the start of this quest? That's a question I asked myself when I saw this.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I get it from a game design perspective.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't.
I'm not sure if it should have been ever be surfaced like this. I appreciate the idea behind it and the replay and all that stuff. And
oh, definitely.
But you know, it breaks a bit of the emotion. And I did the replay because I wanted to, and I'll probably do like a full replay to get the rewards as well at some point. But, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about the whole thing. And especially about the canon playthrough, because I made choices as a character, and I have regretted some of these choices. And if you take away the ability to not be able to change it, which is a bit of, like, what I mean is, all of a sudden you can change these things. Mm-hmm. That takes away the weight of these decisions.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, if it was not for like for a non-canon replay, I'll get back to that later. That might be okay. But like, especially being able to change your history, like, I feel it removes a layer of depth of my character. Like, I can see my character maybe regretting helping Zaros because Zaros turns out
right,
to be old.
Exactly. And that's his motive at the end of the quest.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of being able to take that away with everything you know in hindsight, it detracts from the experience in a way.
Yeah. And then there's a third tab here, interactions, where you can choose where you're going to, you know, meet various people. But I was not able to get this to work for the life of me. It said that what I set was invalid.
Oh, I have not looked into it. I looked into it and was like, this is too much.
Exactly.
I just didn't get it. So I kept it as is. And I feel I got... I think I changed one of my choices. Only one.
Mm-hmm.
And I got wildly different interactions than what I remember.
Exactly.
And I got all the Seren ones in a row. And then all the Zamorak ones in a row, I think. Like... it felt really out of order and weird, so I'm not entirely sure what happened there.
Yeah. You know, for what it's worth, I did two playthroughs of this. I did one playthrough where I just, you know, did it as a, with my initial choices as a bit of a refresher.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was as I remembered it, and it was the exact same race at the end, and I just got to go a little bit more into the lore of it. And then the second playthrough that I did, my goal there was to subjugate Armadil the most I could.
So, you know, that is something, because I had to do a playthrough because I wanted to make sure, I wanted to do a playthrough for this episode, but also just, you know, doing it. And I considered going for an entirely different lore layout, right? I have a second character I rarely play on, but it is my intention to make that character more of a Zamorak devout, because
like the mirror, way, like the mirror universe Sirion?
What? Yeah. No. Like, no. I don't think that's the case. I think
okay.
There is something to be set for Zamorak's philosophy.
So he's
right?
Still going, like, to be a good guy.
I'm going to be a good guy, but I'm also going to be like, you know, why are these got meddling with everything? You just need to let people do what they want and personal freedom and just take that to an extreme. It's not what I would do in real life, but I can see the merits from it, and I would be interested in playing a character like that. So that's what I'm doing on my second character. And I considered making this playthrough like that to see what I ended up. And I was like, wait a second.
I don't want to know what. Right.
It makes, like, I would just click some tick boxes here and not get the whole experience. I would only get the ending. And then
yeah.
What is the whole value of playing everything leading up to that point? And even on my existing character, I felt playing the quest again, I greatly enjoyed seeing all the cutscenes again, but it didn't have the same feel.
Yep.
Because yep. The momentum.
Exactly.
I forgot probably 90% of what happens in the quest before this. And I think this would have been super interesting if I would have been able to do this a year ago.
And there's point but number one.
Right now, I want to like it, and I still do like it, and I appreciate that this is a passion project, so it takes time.
Of Mon Raven, nonetheless, and we know how passionate he is.
But this was, first of all, a feature that was promised. So why this ended up as a passion project and not something being picked up by the content team goes beyond me. But at this point, what is the relevance of redoing the quest?
Yeah.
It's great, but yeah. Why this specific quest?
I agree.
If this was built in part of the update, it would make sense, but...
but it's not.
You know, and that bugged me throughout the entire replay. Like, the fact that there were references I didn't fully understand anymore, and I didn't understand the characters' reactions because I forgot exactly how I treated them. And even though we only had 3 or 4 quests that year in the Sliska timeline, there was momentum, there were events in between, but that was completely gone, and it sort of broke the magic of the quest for me.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And, you know, you can only do the convert canon thing once. So, I mean, you had better make damn sure that's the way you want things to turn out, right? So, but nonetheless, you know, there is an option after you press the start button. You can skip directly to the maze, or you can go deliver the invites. Now, to get the reward at the end, you need to do the complete quest, and that means delivering the invites, going through the maze, you can do that without puzzles, and fighting Sliske at the end. And each of the components are skippable except for the maze part in the middle, which is good. So you can skip the invites and you can skip the boss fight if you just want to go for lore. And I mean, that's great, because I think it will allow people to go back and figure out and find things that they might have missed. But at the same time, like you said, is it really that useful at this point to have that?
See, you can change the tick box about what happened, but then in the end, it's like, is there really, like, are you really going to get a good feel for it? Like, you're going to have different cutscenes, but you're not going to understand the cutscenes to the level of having actually made those choices in those quests, I think.
Yeah.
And something that I find interesting is characters that have been created after the world events. How will that be represented
in these choices? Very good point.
I don't have a member account that finished a quest, so I can't check it right now. But like, for those people, those choices don't even make sense.
Yep.
What is World Event 1?
Right? Maybe you'll just get sent to Lumbridge and get asked to choose a side after watching the cutscene.
I have no idea. It's
no. All right.
And if those are really significant choices, then new characters will always get a reduced experience from the quest.
Yep. And I think that's why world events aren't going to be coming back in the same way that they were there. Because, I mean, you can have people experience it, but at the same time, I mean, what does that do for the general narrative of the game?
Oh, the Tuska event was fine.
Yeah, it was. So inside the maze, you know, we had issues on the first playthrough because it had just come out with some bugs and whatnot. Thankfully, those have all largely been fixed, right? Is that
largely?
Largely. Well, yeah, largely. That's why I said that, because I mean, there's still the potential to be a couple. I experienced one. How was your experience?
I got really angry at accidentally skipping a cutscene, and then I realized I could replay it by clicking the mask.
Yeah.
So it was okay in the end, but also it made me really angry that I could still skip the cutscene, because it happens twice more in my playthrough, and you can call me impatient for clicking too much or whatever, but it should not be that easy to completely miss out on a cutscene.
No. Okay. So, I mean, you can go through there and you can pick up all kinds of information, and you know, I appreciate the intrinsic keys with the gods and whatnot, you know, Saren and Zaros especially, since they're going to be the major ones going forward.
So despite not having the context, I enjoyed the cutscenes more in this maze.
Right, because I'm going to tell you why I enjoyed them more, and we'll see if we have the same idea here. It's because we didn't have the pressure of completing a maze with annoying puzzles, and we were so focused on that it kind of took away from that experience.
Also, the time limit. Like, there's no, like, well, yeah, the time limit might still exist, but like, you don't care, because this is not your canon playthrough, right? You don't care. You want to see the cutscenes, and I could really focus on what was being said,
right?
And I felt it was much easier to take in the information.
And
there were no weird camera bugs as far as I could see. Like, the whole cut, like, I got so much more out of the cutscenes. Like, I don't think I remembered a single cutscene from before, but I feel that now that, like, I actually know what happened.
Yeah, because I remember when I was doing this quest initially, I had the thought, you know, I need to progress through these puzzles quickly, and I need to progress through the cutscenes and dialogue quickly because someone is racing me to get to the end of the maze, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the sense that was given there. And
exactly.
And I mean, we didn't know that it was going to be, you know, a race after you get out of the maze, but nonetheless.
And also, so in my canon playthrough, I was not the first one to finish the first part of the maze. And this time, because it's much easier to get through, I actually won in the first part of the maze, which made me choose which of the gods loses their followers.
Exactly.
And that was such an interesting interaction that I bet 99% of the players missed.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, I got that stuff out of the quest, and I'm like, this should have been in my original playthrough. If you add the original playthrough with all the magic and the context to the sheer enjoyment of actually the lore in the maze this time, you would have had such a beautiful quest.
Yeah. Who did you make lose their followers?
Myself.
Ooh. Why did you choose that?
Because I was being followed by Ictarin, who was, in my case, behaving like somebody who lost their mind.
Oh, okay.
And not really enjoying their stay there. So I chose myself to force Sliska to release Ictarin out of the maze.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. That's why I really liked that interaction, because that is what my character would do, and that felt like such a great addition to my character, to Sliska's character, and to the whole story in general.
Yeah. I kicked Zamorak's followers out in the first go. And then on my second go, when I was trying to kneecap Armadil, I kicked Armadil's followers out. And that led to something else very interesting that I don't know if many people got, but if you make Armadil be alone and you know, you're going up against him in the maze, he will let you pluck one of his feathers from him, and you get an Armadil's feather item just from this quest. I don't know if that's something that people got on their first playthrough, but if you have Armadil alone and he is feeling as though he's not going to win, he will let you grab one of his feathers when he's molting, because as he said, he hasn't molted for a millennia because he hasn't been a true bird since then.
I have gotten the molting cutscene, but Armadil still had his followers, so I didn't get to pick a feather.
Yes, exactly. So that's a neat little thing. Like it's an item. It doesn't do anything. It's just one of those little quest items. And I found that really...
I guess like that is sort of the fun thing you can find out with these replays, and you can go and find these secrets. But again, I think these secrets would have 100 times as much magic to them if you encountered them more naturally.
Right.
And you have to sort of wonder how much... Because so many people missed out on all these magic moments. Like, Sliska completely lost it when I was like, I want to lose my followers. And Sliska was like, you don't even have any followers! Like, that interaction is, like, it's so beautiful. And, like, Armadil's feather and all that stuff. And I wonder how much the choice was worth it, losing all these experiences.
I don't think it was worth it. Because
I think it could have been handled in a more elegant way.
Exactly. Because, I mean, you get to the end of the quest and you get to the maze – or sorry, the end of the maze, and you're racing for the stone. And
I
then,
actually got to race Saradomin.
In which playthrough?
In the replay.
Oh, okay. And who did you race in the
– Armadil.
Okay. I raced Armadil in my original playthrough – back in 2016, I raced Armadil again in my replay because I assume I took most of the same decisions. And then on the third playthrough or the second playthrough this week, when I kneecapped Armadil, I ended up racing Saradomin. Now,
I also asked Saradomin why it was blue, and that was hilarious.
That's something we missed previously, I think.
It was such a good interaction.
Yeah. What was his response?
Something about being hot-headed, so he needs to keep his cool, and why are you even asking this?
I And you got to remember, that's because the gods are all down at the level of, you know, having no powers. And and there are points where you can encourage them to fight, like Zamorak versus Zaros. And it's like, oh, why don't you do that, Sliske said. Because Zaros is just an effective piece of cloth right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, lots of interesting little things like that. I had the choice in my second playthrough to choose who I was racing for with a stone. Now, is that part of the replay or was that in the initial quest?
That must have been a replay.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you can choose Armadyl, Ceridoman, or Zamorak.
I never saw that. So.
Okay. And then there was also an option.
Oh, yes, no. It told me who do you want to race, and then I chose the one. The one decided by my choices.
Right, that no, wasn't really. That wasn't an option allowed as well. Okay,
I think that's part of the lore maze.
Yeah, and now this is another question I had following from this: are the decisions made in the maze the only thing that determines who you race, or are the decisions you made outside also determining that? That's something I wasn't clear on.
I can't see. I think there's not really anything from any choices of the outside that would influence the.
Okay.
So in the maze.
So in other words, then the things you see in the maze are just going to be, the things you did in the quest are just going to be influence the dialogue inside the maze.
I think things outside of the quest influence what you see in the maze, and what you do in the maze is going to influence your racing partner.
Right. Okay.
So it's sort of an indirect causation.
Yeah. And it doesn't take away from the fact that at the end everyone is funneled towards the same kind of ending, where whether it's you, Ceridoman, Armadyl, or Zamorak who gets to the stone first, Karapak comes in and destroys the stone, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think that is something that they had to do because, I mean, it doesn't make sense to give one of the gods a stone, right? Or even let you have it. So that was, you know...
It would make for a nice POH decoration.
Yeah, definitely, it would. But at the end of the day, it just felt like, okay, we have done all these quests, Death of Chivalry, you know, Fate of the Gods, Dishonor Among Thieves, The Light Within... Nomad's Requiem. Nomad's Elegy and all of the quests leading up to this. And you get to Sliske's endgame. And at the end, a dragonkin comes in and destroys the stone. And it's, you know, we've talked about this before. You want something more that is going to be influenced by your decisions that you make, but they can't do that because of all the different choices they would have to write into the quest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, I mean, getting into the end and just having the stone destroyed, it just kind of felt like a huge letdown because that's what this whole thing was going to be about, right?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how to respond to that.
And that then made me rethink, and I think we touched on this back in the day when this came out, is that, you know, that's not the whole point of this quest, you know, up to that point appears to get the stone, but in reality, after that, it is the discussion after the fight with Sliske that you have with Jazz that is what is the important part of this quest, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I see it.
Well, no, the important part of this quest is the awesome cutscene. Why kills Sliske, but...
True. And you do get to see that regardless of if you fight him or not, which I thought was good.
Yeah. Because, I love it. It's probably the best cutscene in the game.
Yeah, and there's that little sliver of doubt at the end of it in the Sliske's cackle that you have part of him inside you now that you're potentially possessed.
It's done beautifully.
Yeah. Now, I did the full boss fight again, and I don't know why I did that. I must have felt daring that day. but it didn't feel as bad as it did the first time for some reason. Maybe it's because there was no pressure this time.
Hmm.
I don't know.
I haven't tried to contact the final boss fight.
It didn't feel real.
Mm.
But now we get to the point at the end where you can ask Jazz any one question. I took the short way out the first time and I asked her, what are you? And she just said, we are, which was a real letdown. yeah. Now, if you – what I did the second time round, and I'd be interested to hear what you did, is I asked about the remaining Elder artifacts, which was – okay. And that was an interesting discussion, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So the question –
I also found the – despite knowing that it was Jazz all along, because that was something that you didn't know in the original quest, I found the interaction much more satisfying this time around than the original.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, like the original, maybe sort of the entire maze and stuff has sort of altered my memory, but
I think it's entirely possible.
Like the actual cutscenes and interactions are so, so good. Like there's so much good stuff in this quest, which was sort of diluted and hidden under bugs and mechanics.
Yep, definitely.
Like that's why I don't regret spending time on doing the replay, despite not getting the touch. But yeah, I think it's worth saying that if you strip out the maze, it's actually a really good quest.
And I think that's what we said when the quest first came out.
So yeah. I mean, I feel really sorry for the people who designed and implemented the maze, but it just doesn't work.
I also enjoyed seeing Zaris' little hissy fit where he wants ascension again.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
And you see, that's what his goal throughout this entire thing was, but then you get to the point where you ultimately discover what Jazz wanted to do. But before that, I'm just looking up some dialogue here. Let's see, where is that? So what did you think of the artifact discussion with Jazz?
Definitely something we haven't heard the last of.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean,
also interesting that they don't seem to be wanting to replace Ma or any of the artifacts that have been destroyed.
Well, the Stone of Jazz has been destroyed.
Well, yeah. So yeah, it leaves the wonder, like, is there anything special about the current iteration of the cosmology?
Okay, and that's where we can discuss that first. But I just remembered one thing that I think Colton might have mentioned in the initial playthrough. I don't know if you saw this, but in my second replay, when I was trying to help Ceridomen along and push Zamorak and Armadyl to the side, I got a really interesting cutscene with Char.
Oh?
Yeah. There was this really interesting cutscene, and the idea behind this was that it was a discussion between Char and Zaros, and the thing was asking Char, basically saying to Char, you've been sleeping all along in your cave there, right? What was the name of that quest with Char and the
Firemaker's Curse?
Firemaker's Curse, okay. He says, you've been sleeping all along and you had no idea that Ma was suffering like this? And Char basically comes in and says, no. And there's this interesting disagreement between Char and Zaros, which, you know, when you think about it, I don't know if anyone got that going through the first time in the quest, but yeah, let me pull that up here regarding this, because I didn't see it the first time round. Did you?
Nope.
No.
Not that I remember, at least. I might have seen it, but like I said, I don't remember. I only saw it, and this time around, the only thing I saw with Char was Char and Azanadra. Fighting who was the best follower of Zaros. That was a bit.
So let's see. I'm just reading through this here. Let's see. Sorry about this. I wanted to bring this in, but okay. Yeah, here it is. So it was Sliske trying to provoke a fight between Zaros and Char. Basically, Sliske comes in there and, you know, says, just between you and me, Char, I like to call them Zaranadrath, which, of course, was, you know, Azanadra.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
Zaros.
That was something I
missed this the first time going through. And Sliske then says, oh, do hush. You're right, though. My attention is needed elsewhere. Ta-ta for now. So now you just have Char and Zaros in the room. And Char says, Lord. Zaros replies, lies, Char. You know I was aware of nothing. Yes, Lord. So the idea behind this here is that Zaros tries to say he wasn't aware of what Ma's suffering was going through. And that raises a whole new question about Fate of the Gods, too, I think. Because was Char in that quest? I don't think she was.
I don't remember so.
Yeah. But yeah, that's definitely something that you can get into and talk with here. So I would highly recommend everyone trying to push them off to the side regarding that, because it definitely allows you to see Char, which I think is only has one small appearance in this quest. So anyways, now the cosmology that pretty much, see, we didn't know much about cosmology before RuneFest now, did we?
Exactly.
And there was definitely some discussion of that happening in this quest. I think specifically at the jazz discussion with this. Now,
I think actually the main point where it came forward and where I started really noticing it is when Sliske encourages you, like when I won the stone, right? And at that point, Sliske encourages you to use the stone to destroy like the other gods or whichever. And when you refuse to do that, he's talking about stagnation and how Gilenor is the keystone to the cosmology. And as long as Gilenor doesn't change, there is no progress. And I think this where what Sliske is talking about here is the next iteration, right?
Exactly. And what that leads us into is ultimately what the whole point of this quest is, looking at it from this perspective, you know, the keystone of creation. That doesn't sound like something that Sliske would say, now is it?
Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, where Jazz as an agent really sort of shines true.
Yep.
And I think it makes the quest so much more fun and grave now that we know this cosmology thing. And while we might not agree with Sliske's ways, there might be bigger powers behind this. And, you know, in a way, this replay has sort of warmed me up against for future Elder God quests.
Yeah.
Because I was like,
right,
I don't care about this whole sixth age stuff. Give me my pirates. Give me my gnomes. Give me my...
And that is the whole point of the quest. Sliske,
I think,
is the agent of Jazz to stop this stagnation and bring about the destruction of the world, because the Elder Gods probably don't want to do it themselves.
Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of the point. I think it was, because you know Veneske was like the previous keystone.
That's right.
And Gideon is the next one. And yeah, super interesting. So yeah, in that case, I'm looking forward to what they come up with. But it should not be an excuse to not get me my gnome finale. Please.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. other elemental, elder artifacts are the needle, the hammer, the codex, and the template. I don't know if we didn't really know much about those before, but that's the rest of them. Then Jazz says, the rest you know.
Mm-hmm.
So. Okay. Okay. Theory
I love
time.
How all these things are like tools of creation, right? A hammer, yeah. A needle, A template.
And the codex.
Codex.
So,
not so sure about the feather, but you can make arrows with them, I guess. I don't know.
The feather is an elder artifact?
Didn't you say that?
No, I said...
I thought the feather was the thing that they said. That's what I remember.
I said the needle, the codex,
okay,
and the
template. I misremembered then. I thought the feather was a thing.
Yeah. So, theory time.
Oh, dear. Let me find my tin hat.
Yeah, definitely. You might need that here. So we know Sliske was the agent for Jazz to bring about the destruction of the world. Mm-hmm. Now, we also know that the reward that we get for completing this quest the second time around is a cosmetic outfit called the Agent of the Eldest. And it looks like a piece of concept art for something. I don't know how to describe it, but it's a cosmetic that you get from completing this. And of course, Agent of the Eldest. So Agent of the Eldest means Agent of the Elder God or Agent of Jazz. Now, you're right. This is pretty far out there, and we might need some tinfoil hats on us right now. So, Sliske was the agent and was controlled. I don't know. You think he was controlled, or do you think he was doing this on his own accord by Jazz?
Combination, I think.
Okay. Now, at the end of the quest, we stab Sliske with the Staff of Armadil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that also stabs us a bit because he thrusts it back into us. And at the end of the quest, you get the evil cackling that you hear once you get up back into the desert. And then once when you go back to talk to Rilomia in Edgeville, evil cackling once again. Now, this, I don't know if this was ever addressed, but to me, it seems like what's happening here is there is a case of possession going on. I think we can all agree with that, right?
Okay.
Now, if we have this little bit of Sliske, or at least his spirit inside of us, and that spirit was controlled by Jazz,
mm-hmm.
What if the end of the Elder God quest line, when we initially get there, touches back onto this, and the reason we're able to save the world, because I don't think we're going to destroy the world, are we? No. And the reason we're able to save the world is that this little bit of Sliske's spirit or mind that is left with us convinces or is able to be amplified to convince and be controlled by us to convince Jazz and the other elder gods that we are capable of also being their agent with having that part of Sliske on us. Now, with that being said, if we have Sliske's mind or Sliske's spirit on us and we're partially the agent, doesn't that make sense that the elder gods would be more inclined to listen to us?
All right. So have you ever heard of Occam's Razor?
Yes.
Yeah. You're making this complicated.
Well, basically what I'm trying to say is I'm saying that this little nugget of Sliske that's on us, that's going to be the way out of this entire quest line.
Yeah, I think it would be cheap in a way. I think the whole being occupied by Sliske is a bit of a cheap ending to this quest. Like,
it is.
That's a bit of intrigue, but like,
it is.
Like, come on.
And I mean,
kill off the character, right?
And I mean, they've been there before and they have done rather absurd things to get out of quest lines. So, I mean, I'm not saying this is the way it's going to happen, but this is definitely some way that it could go.
So, here's another theory, right? About being occupied and all that stuff by Sliske.
All right.
You go back to, how she called it, Romana? Yes.
To
DM is heavy.
Yeah, I think.
Romana? I don't know. I'll call her Romana. And you have to laugh.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she's really happy and different. What if that's the bit of Sliska soul that was inside you being transferred to Ramona?
Well, that could work as well.
There you go. Or what if we are occupied by Sliske and will slowly transform into Sliske, travel back in time, and we are Sliske? Mm-hmm.
And what? Undo the entirety of the Sixth Age and not wake anyone up?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just coming up with theory. That's what you get for having me put on a tin hat.
Yeah, and like I said, this was going to be pretty far out there, and I don't know if they would go that route, or if there's a better literary way of doing it.
I guess we'll see. I think
I'm just saying this because I really, really hope they don't go this way, because it does seem like a cheap way out.
I mean, I think the Agent of the Eldest outfit has a more straightforward explanation in that we are the agent in trying to convince the Elder Gods about life being worth it.
All right.
That's the simple explanation. We are the agent of Jazz now. We are the agent to
convince
the Elder Gods that life should be preserved. We are that agent. We are half that responsibility.
Okay, that's another good way of looking at it. And that's a very straightforward way of looking at it too.
And therefore most more likely to be true.
All right, we'll go with that then. Though I can't get over that. I don't know. I feel like it was said somewhere that we might be hearing from Sliske again in some way or another.
You know, this is a thing in writing and movies and TV series where killing off a character is really hard, apparently. And I hope RuneScape doesn't go that way. Sometimes you have to.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to off them.
Because otherwise it's not significant.
Yeah.
And like keeping us like never coming back to this again and leaving us in uncertainty is completely fine.
Yeah, that would be good too. I mean, until something happens with the Elder Gods one day, just like Saradoma and Zamorak appeared that one day after Guthix was gone, right? Yeah. So all right. Is there anything else we want to say about the replayability of the quest?
I think for all the bad stuff we have said about this, I think we should at least thank Motvaven for powering through this.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
We are very critical people, but
This quest had Mod Raven tones all through it, and I mean that's something everyone likes. And we said it best here, you know. Aside from the puzzles in the maze and the glitches, the 48 hours after it first came out in 2016, you remove the maze. This is a good quest, right?
It leaves a bit of a bitter taste that we can only really experience it this way. Over a year after its initial release, where the bodies are cold, basically.
Right? Yeah.
That just leaves a bit of a bitter taste, but it doesn't take away about the awesomeness of the quest and the work that's gone into making, like, exposing all these choices and making it possible to replay this quest.
Yeah. Are you ready, though, for the Elder Gods to come back? And
I think we
continue
should
on with that quest line.
The point is, the Sixth Age storylines have now sort of quieted down for a bit. I don't see a reason to start them back up just to have them die down again. I think we should go back, finish the Fifth Age, and then go full steam ahead on showing Jazz what we like.
All right. Well, then. That sounds good.
And also fix this mess where you can do quests out of chronological order.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, we're going to talk now a little bit about some other things that came this week. A big update. The Divination Elder Simulacrum outfit is now available in-game. You gain the fragments just like with any other skills when training Divination at level 70. Then once you get
to... Of course, Darius would make his decision only very shortly after I decide to finally go for my 100 Elder Chronicles.
Right.
Of course. Salt's Law.
And even after Vic comes in.
Yeah, well... Yeah, that was... Yeah, I actually considered getting the Simulacrum outfit pieces. I'm so glad I didn't go for them. But, yeah, I think a lot of people might be frustrated at having spent points on the outfits that are now available.
Yeah. Level 80 Divination to fuse, level 20 Invention to put them all together and build them. And, I mean, let's just recap the... special abilities here. 3 daily teleports to any wisp colonies that you have both the levels and the quest requirements to visit. Unlimited teleports to May Stormbrewer, Guthix's Cave, given you've completed the World Wakes. 7% chance to harvest 2 memories at once, providing you with twice the XP and twice the energy. 7% chance to obtain 2 Chronicle Fragments or Elder Chronicles at once when harvesting a wisp or an Elder Wisp.
Yeah.
5% chance to get 5 times the energy while harvesting wisps. Activates the Diviner's outfit bonus if owned and depending on how many outfit pieces you have, even if the set is in your bank or being held by Diango, and all the benefits of the modified Diviner's headwear if owned. So, yeah, definitely huge outfit. These ones here are always great. And along with this, the skill head add-ons have been brought into game, and you can... get them by completing various mini games. Talking about divination here, first off the bat, 5% chance to save energy while weaving or transmuting, and it's a random chance to get when you leave a Guthixian cache. So that's a pretty easy one to have a chance at getting, not like some of the other ones, I think, that actually require a little bit more here to do. Like, for example... the cooking one, you have to complete random gnome restaurant deliveries. And I don't know anyone who likes doing that. So, but I'm glad I don't have to do that one. I actually got that one off Treasure Hunter this week. Believe
I have all of the head items.
Oh, good. All right. The farmer's one is nice. 2% chance to save seeds when planting them. That one comes from Cabbage Face Punch Bonanza. Artisan's head comes from the Stealing Creation reward shop. That one's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. Do people still play that unless it's... I mean, they probably do if it's on Spotlight, but aside from that?
I think the non-combat Stealing Creation stuff probably still exists.
Okay. First Age head add-ons, that comes from the Ghost near the Ectofunctus, and the Shaman's head add-on. For summoning comes from a random chance when opening a box of summoning ingredients from familiarization. So you can pretty much get all these in world.
Am I correct in the fact that this was demoed after the game jam last year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was. And, you know, it's just like the aura bag. I mean, these things are, I guess, low priority, but they take a while to come in. So... Anyways, ready to move on to some patch notes?
I'm always ready to move on to some patch notes.
Yeah, we got some pretty big ones this week. So I'm going to start off with something small, and that's Portable Fletchers now default to the tip back criminal bolt section of the make interface. I mean, I guess they would want to do that, given that's the most recent item to come into game. So that's there. Trying to activate a favorite aura while on cooldown via the aura management icon now displays the cooldown time remaining. That's nice. Checking time remaining on the Hellion aura no longer provides multiple blank lines in the produces multiple blank lines in the chat box. Someone, I guess, added a few extra new line characters there. Text when confirming deactivating an aura has been changed to "Would you like to swap auras?" So the idea behind this is that you lose the charge you were running before, but you can just swap your aura right now to that. So that's good. The right-click aura list on the aura management icon now updates correctly when players upgrade a favorited aura. That's good. I was using it with non-favorited ones when I was upgrading, and it was, you know, just instant right off the bat. So
I didn't know you could favorite auras.
Yeah, there's a little star there. You didn't see it?
Mm.
Yeah, it's kind of grayed out. You have to click it. The runic accuracy aura will now appear in the combat section within the aura management interface. Favorited previously owned lower-tiered variants of auras are no longer stuck in the aura management upon right-click activation list.
That's good.
Yeah. That's quite a lot of words there, too. Lower-tiered versions of auras that were favorited, they're no longer stuck in the activation list. All right. All right, now here's two big ones. Players can no longer use box traps or mithril seeds to skip Telos' tendril attack. And players can no longer skip the next Angel of Death icicle mechanic using box traps.
I am in a way kind of sad that this is no longer possible because it's so genius.
You can just put them on the ground and deploy them.
I could see Naxxus standing there like, what are you doing? There's no rabbits here.
And if you put a box trap down, because you can stand on the box trap, you're immune from those attacks. I want to know who found this out. how do you find this?
I don't know. I don't know. Why would you bring mithril seeds to Telos? I don't know.
I guess if you wanted flowers.
Yeah. Maybe somebody wanted to kill Telos as flowers. Yeah, I don't know.
And those are cheap, if I recall, because they come from the Legends Guild.
Yeah, they're pretty expensive, I think.
Mithril seeds produce flowers, which we know. And, you know, that just a quick little note there. Those were the initial Game of Chance things that happened. Let's see. How much do you cost here? Oh, not much at all.
Mm-hmm.
300 coins.
Oh, that's okay.
And there's 500 of them in stock at the same time. And you can sell them on the exchange. Okay. I don't know. I don't know why I found that so funny, but it's there. Oh. Do we just need to start putting down random things when there's stuff that comes out of the ground, or what?
I'm at a loss.
Me too. All right. Pet examines now display the full kill count when a boss is prestige, so it won't say from zero. It'll actually show you how many that you have. And, I mean, I guess that's what you would want if you do have a boss pet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dwarven,
or not, if you really want to show off.
Yeah. Dwarven and Invention multi-cannons can now be reloaded and repaired, resetting their despawn time by left-clicking on them. That's nice. I'm still trying to struggle and find a use case where people use cannons these days.
Dagonoffs.
Okay, fair enough. The dimension of the dam statue has been removed.
Was there a statue?
Yeah, there was a statue commemorating the people who did well in the game.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I almost forgot about that little distraction from last year. Same.
I've never seen it.
Same. But, I mean, remember Dimension of the Damned? I don't.
Well, I remember Dimension of the Damned.
Okay.
Not as a good thing. But...
That's right. That's 2017. We're leaving 2017 and moving on to 2018. And here's a preview of 2018 with this last patch note and a big one at that. It is now possible to bind action bars to specific weapon styles to allow automatic switching to a defined action bar upon equipping a main-handed weapon. This can be managed within the action bar settings interface located in game settings.
Yeah.
Now, this is also big because if you go into the game settings and then action bar settings, there is an option, switch bar when loading bank presets.
Yeah.
So this gets us pretty close to another thing that was promised with the bank rework. So
yeah,
it will automatically change your action bars for you in combat. So if you're wanting to switch between magic and ranged, it will know what you want to have equipped, and it just does it for you.
So I have a problem with this.
All right.
One of my bars is for both magic dual wield and magic two-handed.
Right.
You can pick one of them per action bar.
Oh. Yeah. And I'm guessing this is what we will need for the future updates, you know, when the bank rework inevitably comes out, is something that will allow you to potentially bind multiple of them.
Correct.
And you can also hack it a bit, that if you wanted to automatically, you know, change your action bar to a skilling bar, like if you were runecrafting, you could have your runecrafting loadout, and if you runecraft with the Steam Battle Staff, just set that to your magic two-hander one, and that'll also work for your action bar right there. So
that's the second thing I didn't like about this.
All right.
So I knew this was a patch note, and I wanted, like, 2 days later, I logged into the game, wanted to take a look at it. What is, if you know you can do that, what's the first time place you look for this?
Probably, well, the bank settings.
In the corner of the action bar is a cog icon. Right? That's action bar settings, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you know where it sends you?
It sends you to the combat settings.
Exactly! I was like, what's this? This is not the action bar setting. I closed the interface and I clicked the cog again because I thought I misclicked. That's how intuitive it was. So, I had to go to the patch notes to find out where this is. See, features should be discoverable, because yes, otherwise they might as, not,
they as might well, as well not exist. Right. And
I knew about the existence of this feature and it was still not discoverable.
Yeah.
I'm going to make our listeners draw their own conclusions based on these facts.
Yeah.
How about?
And that's why also, if you're watching the video version of RSBNB update, there's a little bit of a backing video that shows you exactly how to set this up. And that's something that I do when, you know, we have interfacey things on the show here. And you know, it's not like it needs to be that way, but it is. And I mean, when you think about it, the powers tab that has all the different abilities on it and the combat settings, that could also very well be action bar settings. And, you know, this is just another example of things in RuneScape being designed by different teams and having a different, let's just say, design manual on this to come up with the way it looks, which is not good. So, but I think on the whole, people will be very pleased with this, just given the fact that, you know, you're going to be able to do this now if you're in combat. And I think that's the main reason for it, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I don't want to diminish the feature in any way, but it's just, it's not really well thought through, is it?
No, it's not.
And that's, it's just a case of so many updates. You're like, oh, that's a really cool idea, but it's someone who picked this up because they thought it was a good idea and then never checked with an actual game designer. In a way, that's how it feels.
Yeah. And in some ways, it's like asking the player to stand on their head and recite some kind of rhythmic poem to access this.
Yeah, basically. And I mean, I think the ability to put these options in the game elegantly distinguishes a good game developer from an exceptionally good game developer.
Well said. Well said. And, you know, just on the topic of patch notes and speaking of standing on your head, I got my friends list working again this week.
Well done.
Yeah. And here's how I did it.
Stand on your head and recite a poem.
Pretty much. Because what I had to do is I dragged the panel out from its window that was holding it, the friends list panel, right? Mm-hmm. I made it really large. I made it, you know, take up a good chunk of the center of my screen. Like if I put my fist on my screen, that's how big I made it, which is pretty big, right? So
well, it depends on the size of your screen, but
true. Sure. Now, after that, I made it large. I closed it. I hopped worlds to do something. And then when I opened it up again, it was there. And
is it now permanently fixed? Or do you have to go to these hoops every single time?
If I make it smaller, I need to go through those hoops again.
But you can reproduce it.
Oh, yeah, I can reproduce it.
Have you reported it?
Yes. Good. And the funny part about this is that this was really annoying me trying to get this to be fixed. So rather than, you know, just trying various things aimlessly, what I set out to do is I basically said, okay, I've been given a bug report and someone's friends list is not working. So what am I going to do to make it not work? Well, first things first, I'm going to make sure it's its own window on its own. Then I'm going to make sure there's enough room to display all of its data that it wants to display. Then if that doesn't work, I'm going to do the classic thing of turning it off and starting it up again. So I close it, reopen it, didn't work. Close it, change world, log in, it works. And, you know, that's almost to the sense of, you know, bug testing and needing to figure something out like that to make it work. And it's not right. And hopefully it gets fixed soon. But that's just a little bit of a PSA out there to those of you guys who are struggling with your friends list and having it not work. Because I tested this actually on the, you know, I made a new cache. I cleared my cache. I even logged into the owner of our friends chat, Bits Bytes. If you guys want to come and join us there and play with us, you can join that friends chat, Bits Bytes. I logged into that account and everything was fine there. So I knew it was something with the way that the interface was set up because it's not the cache. It's not my user. So it was just something really, really odd. But anyways, that's just an addition to the patch notes. One final thing on this last patch note. Do you think that this further diminishes the need for the bank rework?
No.
No? Okay, why? No. Why not?
May I speak frankly?
Yes.
The bank is a piece of shit.
Okay.
It's slow. It's a pain. Unresponsive.
Okay. And, you know, we have been talking a lot recently on the show about bank rework and, you know, can we get by on just these little fixes along the way? And I think you make a fairly good argument for actually doing the full-blown bank rework then. And in that regards, then, yes, they should absolutely press ahead with it. So I will take that under advisement.
Inventory management is such a major part of the game.
Yeah, and when you have a bank, that's huge. So,
like, if the basic thing that your game relies on because I think the inventory, I think RuneScape is based on two systems, the inventory and the combat system.
Yep.
If the inventory doesn't work super smoothly, your game doesn't run super smoothly. So, yes, you should fix the game. You should fix the bank. How often in a normal game session do you interact with the bank?
That's a very good point. It's a very good point.
Why does that not deserve your fullest attention?
Yeah. It's something called mobile.
Yeah. But that's a few things that really need your attention. That is the things you do very, very often. In this case, your bank. And that's the really important things you might not do much, but are really, really important, like the initial sign up.
True.
Those need to be super smooth.
Yeah.
And they are not. So, yeah, the bank needs to be worked. I can be really quick about that.
All right. Fair enough. One final piece of RS news before we go. The offer on the Premier Club to get that is expiring on February 4th at 2359 UTC. If you have not already got that, or you are thinking about getting it and you're on the fence.
Or if you still need the last few buns to afford it.
Yep. Gold Premier Club members will get a free Master Clue Scroll to coincide with the release of February's Clue Scroll Overhaul. There we go. We know what the headlining update of February is.
Yeah, that's a whole different story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But let's just enjoy what's left of this week and move on. And because I think we've had a fairly good episode so far. Maybe.
Sure.
All right. If you guys want to get a quick idea of what's happening. Early on in the week when the RuneScape update comes out, you want a little bit of RSBNB update before the fact, just head on over to youtube.com/RSBNBstaff where you can find the weekly bite. And of course, the weekly bite is a quick little rundown of the week's RuneScape updates and patch notes. And they, you know, if you can't find the
action bar settings, for example, it will show you. So, like, it's excellent.
Yeah, except I didn't show people the action bar settings this week.
Oh, painful.
I did talk about that, though. And I did talk about Sliske's endgame and PTSD. But you're right. We should have included that this week. But videos for patch notes coming next week. Next week, I promise. All right. We're going to move on to questions right now. We got two of them this week. The first one is from Parnassius.
G'day, guys. Parnassius here. And I have what I think is my first non-RS-related question for you this week. Humble Bundle recently put up a great offer for around $1,500 worth of programming books for $15, which I decided to buy. I just wanted to know what you would suggest for someone with limited experience in programming, but wanted to dip his feet in and try and understand it a bit better. I'm not expecting to create the next RuneScape, but want to dabble in it a bit and just have a bit of fun experimenting and learning about it. Glad to see you have a proper computer back now that is fully functioning again too, Shane. Thanks in advance for answering my question, and happy scaping to all.
Let's have some fun.
Well, I get this question so much, and I never know how to respond to it really well.
Well, let's start from the beginning. What was your first programming language?
I am not entirely sure. There's two things that sort of happened in parallel in my childhood. I'm not sure which came first. But I think my first programming language was PHP.
Okay.
So that was, yeah.
And PHP is a web-based programming language.
I mean, back
came out in the 90s.
Back when I learned that, it was still a pretty big thing, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty standard to write your app things in PHP. I don't think it's as much anymore. Even
no.
It's still being used.
Biggest user of PHP today, I believe, is Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually learned like the basics of programming for a book. And
in PHP?
A PHP book, yeah. Because I really wanted to make my own website that...
That wasn't just was HTML and static.
A game.
Oh, a game. Okay.
Yeah. No, that didn't work out. I was thinking a bit too big. but yeah, that was basically the point. Yeah, that was my first experience with programming.
Okay.
But yeah, like the book helped getting the first idea of the concepts. Then the second thing I started doing is, so it's this game engine, RPG Maker, it's called. I started making games, and the actual engine was based on Ruby, and in the editor, you could actually change the Ruby scripts that ran the game.
Okay.
And what I started doing, because you have all the scripts of the engine, but you can change things. And that is sort of my biggest recommendation, even though it's really hard to find a good program to do this with. I was really lucky, but I think the best way to learn programming is to change have an existing working thing and changing it. Break it. See how it breaks. What do you do? Why do you do it? And then try to understand what you broke and why and where. And that is where I got basically all my intuitive understanding from programming came from there, with some of the mechanics from the books. And then when I went to university and actually did a course in programming, everything just clicked together. And after like the first week, like,
it's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
And everything just worked. And ever since then, it has just been growing from there. But like, my dad is trying to learn programming as well. I'm trying to help him, but something that's really hard for people to do is you can do a course, right? And it will tell you exactly what to do and what to write and what everything is. And then it tells, like, and then you start doing some of your own programs, right? Like implement like a calculator or something. And they have no idea where to start.
Yeah.
And that's really hard. Programming is not the same as making an application. And that's why start with something existing and break it.
Yeah.
Because that works.
And you touch on a very good point here. Programming, I like to say, is the equivalent of learning how to write.
Exactly.
In English or whichever language you choose.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually creating things is the equivalent of writing a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Because it needs planning and it needs to have a good foundation. Otherwise, it's just going to work like crap. And
it's a skill as well, right? You can write like little short story. You can like little, that's like a tiny program. But if you need to write like a big software solution that has layers upon layers of systems, it's the same as a big series of big books, right? Because it's like layers of stories with different thing intertwining and sort of interacting. So I think it's a really good analogy.
Yeah. And now people always are going to find this really odd, but my first programming language was C++.
Ouch.
Right? Because believe it or not, in North America, the advanced placement school curriculum, once upon a time, actually used C++ as their programming language over Java.
Mm-hmm.
And now that comes into the point where I'm mentioning Java here, because Java is one of the biggest programming languages in the world. Of course, RuneScape was written in it initially, and you know the back end of it is still probably written in Java, I'd imagine.
I think they have like their own little variant of Java called RuneScript.
RuneScript, yeah. And also learning Java gives you the option of being able to write for one of the biggest app stores in the world, the Android App Store.
Mm-hmm.
So Java is a pretty good language.
Yeah, like I am a big fan of C#. It's very similar to Java.
Right.
But what I always tell people is the exact language you learn doesn't really matter.
Exactly. Exactly.
If you can become proficient at Java, you can translate almost all of that knowledge to, say, C Sharp or another language in a matter of days.
It's precisely. Yeah.
It is... I can't find a good analogy, but only the exact words are different. It's like maybe learning like a different alphabet for the exact same thing, but even simpler than that, because things are named very similarly. So like that knowledge translates really well. I think the hardest part about programming is the mindset and
fixing your programs when they don't work.
I don't think you even need to know a programming language to know how to program.
Exactly. And that's also something else that we can talk about here. Anyone that has an iPad or has access to an iPad can go into the Apple App Store and get something called Swift Playgrounds. And this is something that Apple put out, I think, 2 years ago at this point on iOS. And this is actually – it looks kind of childish on the front, but there's a reason for it. It simplifies programming to the point – where it removes the code from it and it just teaches you how to think logically and how to logically do something in a computer. And then after a few lessons, you'll start to see the code that is used to do what you're telling this application to do. And then by the end of the program, you are actually writing your own code in Apple's language, Swift, for this. So that's another easy way of getting into it if you want something that is going to guide you from the very beginning. Swift Playgrounds on iOS is also
and
really
you
good.
Have similar things like this, right? So a way to learn programming as well is by these simpler applications that have you drag and drop little blocks together. And that might look simplified, and it is, but just – getting into the point of understanding how control flows work, like if this, then that, else, this other thing, is important.
Yeah.
Being able to write loops is important. And from that, you can start expanding your logic to the level of what is a method, what is an object, how do these interact with each other, and sort of build up your intuitive knowledge. And that is something you need to do along with the actual syntax of the language. I think there's a sort of a misunderstanding that if you know one, like the other comes automatically. It's not the case. You need to develop in both ways. The syntactical side, like what do you actually write down for the code to do a certain thing?
Yeah.
I think it's really simple if you understand the intuition. So that is something that's really important. And I don't know. I always find it really hard to explain how I learned it because it's just something that
it's just something you
something.
Do. And you and I were talking about this with the Clan Quest website. We were basically saying we know what needs to be done. It's just a matter of translating that to the various coding languages that we have on the website to make it happen.
Yeah. And I think you and I agree that like as soon as you get over the challenge of being able to do this, that's not the interesting part of programming anymore. It's getting to the point of mapping the behavior to like the right
flows.
And
precisely. It's not the actual
what I find
code.
In my...
It's building the solution, right?
Yes. And it's also, especially on like a massive level, you get a whole different challenge of how do I keep this all sort of in a way where it's maintainable.
Yeah.
How do I separate the different code?
Yeah.
Like the Clan Quest website is thousands of lines of code. The code base I work with at work is hundreds of thousands of lines of code.
Yeah.
Right. That needs to be that. So that's like, but that's not a challenge you have to worry about yet. And yeah, I would recommend like sort of trying to work towards an intuitive understanding in parallel to learning the programming languages. And then take like a little problem from the internet. There's lots of like sites that give you like little problems.
I actually have a list here that I like.
Yeah. Can I finish?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Don't even worry too much about solving them in programming language at first. Try to think how you map them to the atomic logic steps that you will have to do in the program. You don't have to write the code. Try to see if you can translate it to something that is operation after operation after operation, because that's how a computer works, and that's how you have to solve it in a programming language.
That sums it up very nicely. You know, there are some things with this. I mean, a long time ago, back in 2010, I put together something called Learning How to Program on the RSBNB Informer with a number of different things that you could create. I suggested people use Java for this, but you know, just some basic little things involving loops and if statements are there. Also around Christmas time, that thing you showed me, the Advent code calendar.
Advent of code is pretty, some of the problems are pretty complicated, but some of them are really simple. So that's like a fun bit of challenges. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it ultimately comes down to solving a problem that you have, at some point. I think everyone uses programming for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Language-wise, what would we recommend for first languages? I want to say Python and Java.
Yeah, this is difficult. So I'm a big fan of C sharp.
It's going to depend on the person. Okay, C sharp.
Yeah.
That's in the...
because the tooling for that is really simple.
And that's free now if you have Windows.
Correct. Java these days is also not too bad. You can just download IntelliJ and that will give you the whole package. Python is...
It's got a weird syntax.
The problem about Python, it's really simple to get started with. But I don't think it teaches concepts very well because right. It's a bit sloppy.
Yeah,
I think you're better off taking a more strict language like Java and C sharp that makes everything very explicit so that you know what's going on. So that if you ever move to Python, like, you understand what will go on under the hood.
Right.
And I think that's what I would recommend. Same with like JavaScript, right? It's super useful to know, but it's not a good language,
starter,
despite
no,
the fact that it's easy to make something run. It's hard to make it run how you want it to, and there's so much sort of under the hood.
And it's in every web browser.
Well, if you do Java or C#, like the debug tools it gives, because what you can do in C# and Java, if you have a good editor, right, you start the program and you can pause it, and you can step through your code step by step and see exactly how everything changes. That is so helpful.
True. And like, you can't really do that in JavaScript.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can do that in Python either.
You can do it in JavaScript, actually, with the Chrome developer tools or the Firefox developer tools. Python probably has an editor that can do it as well. But C# and Java just lend themselves better to it.
Yeah. So, okay, then. Let's just say C# or Java, then.
Yeah, that's... start with.
And if you're on a Mac, Swift.
Yeah. And like you said, like developing an Android app is a great fun way to get started with programming as well.
You don't even need to publish it.
Yeah, because it's like it's so the difference between these little small programming puzzles and Android apps is that Android apps will be a lot of boilerplate code, which means that the program is not really doing much logic. It's just wiring things up in the right way. So you learn it in a different way. The only thing to keep in mind when making an Android app, at least, is that the documentation is sometimes a bit annoying and you have to do a lot of setup steps to get it working in the first place. And that might be a bit of a turn off in the beginning. But that's going to be true for any solution. Like, you will have to install an editor. You'll have to make it work. So you have to sort of get through that first.
Yeah, so I think the takeaway we can run with this is that you can do it in any way that you like. You can go all in and you can start with C# or Java or Swift if you're on the Mac, and eventually write an application for your platform. Or if you're just wanting to dabble around a bit, you could just play around a bit in Python.
I think the most important thing, though, and that is what really what I think made a big difference for me, is ask questions. Seriously. Break something, and then if you can't figure it out, ask someone why this is not working. Because that's a much better hands-on experience. Because I think having someone I could ask, hey, I changed this, why is this not working? Or, hey, I want to do this, how do I do that? Getting a direct response instead of having to go and find it on the internet is really hard. These days, there's Stack Overflow. So the question you have will be on Stack Overflow with an answer. But do it that way. I think it's much like programming is learned by doing it. It's the same as writing, right? You can't learn writing
exactly
by looking at text. You have to do it.
Yeah. Agree. I think we covered that quite well. I don't know if there's anything else that can be mentioned. I mean, there is tons that
This is a subject I could talk about for hours.
Yeah, I know.
But the problem is everybody learns programming differently. You have to do what works well for you. I just think it's important to understand that intuitive knowledge of the atomic blocks are important and asking questions.
Yeah. I don't know at this point if I'd tell anyone to learn PHP. Probably not.
I wouldn't. It's a relic.
Yeah, on its way out. All right. Thank you, Parnassius. All right. Next one is from Tycho. Do you want to read this?
All right. Tycho Elf here with a question for Shane, Sirion, and our dear Tanis. Well, Tycho, I'm sorry to have to disappoint you, but Tanis is ill. So, all right. I will start off by saying that I'm not in agreement with the Heidrichs, but criminal bolts being the red-headed stepchild that nobody wants. They make it possible to unleash threshold after threshold ability and even allows multiple ultimates to interact with each other. Short story, they are overpowered coinbacks. With that out of my chest, I have been enjoying the replayability of Sliske's endgame. Going through the entire maze all over again, I managed to beat it in 2 hours and 43 minutes without banking. What makes this quest worth to replay, in my opinion, is that the quest is unique for every player due to their choices from previous quests. Choices that one might regret or not. My questions to you three are, do you think the consequences truly affect a player? And what kind of consequences would you have liked added to the quest? It can be everything from extra dialogue to killing off all the gods. And with that said, I'm looking forward to hearing your answer this weekend.
Well, I hate to disappoint, but I still don't think it's worth it to fire Heidrix bolts.
I have no opinion on the matter because I have no idea what it's about.
Yeah. I just know they're very expensive. Very expensive.
Yeah. I mean, it has Heidrix in the name, so that's sort of a giveaway in that case. But yeah.
You know, I don't think this quest truly affects the player. At least not
yet. It doesn't.
Yeah, no.
It doesn't because it's all funneled in the same ending, right?
Exactly. And that's the thing. It all comes down to Jazz and the stone being destroyed. And I was hoping to pick up more out of this quest on the second playthrough. The interactions are nice, but, you know, it just ends the same way. And it just feels like everyone is now back on the same starting page, page one, for the Elder God quest line whenever that resumes.
You know, I guess this is sort of the curse of the information era we live in. If you hadn't known that the ending was exactly the same for all the other players, how would you have felt?
Right?
How?
Exactly. You would have felt special that this is the quest that was made up from all my decisions, and I influenced this.
Yeah. And that's the point, right? It's so easy to know what happens if you choose different choices because you can ask people online.
And you can see it now with replay.
You can even see it now. You can choose the opposite for everything and get the exact same ending to a quest. And I think we sort of covered that before. It takes away the magic.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the magic is in the fact that the choices seemed big at that point. And I think they could have done a better job in sort of, because sure, you need to funnel to the same point, but if you do it smoothly with steps that are logical on each way, it doesn't have to matter that everybody comes back to the same point. But the whole "let's just destroy the stone" was so shoehorned in that, like, it's a bit of an obvious and easy takeout.
But it could have almost been like a game of snakes and ladders.
Yeah.
You know, different ways to get to the end and whatnot, and skip things and so on and so forth. But at the end, y'all arrive at the same end point. So, And I don't think they can do that in RuneScape. It's got to be this way just for simplicity, right? And pretty much in any game. So.
Mm-hmm. If you have a single player game, you can get away with like big changes.
True.
But like, you can't have Edgeville destroyed for one player and not destroyed for another. Like,
oh, here's another. Here's an idea. Here's an idea for Jagex to make money. Mm-hmm. A small little app, little game, little handheld game after mobile comes out. RuneScape: The Sixth Age. It's a single player game, kind of like what's that Assassin's Creed thing? It's going to be single player, played on mobile. Great graphics. You play through it. You can have any which consequences you want. It's truly your game. That would probably take too long to write.
That is what you need if you want consequential choices in your quest.
And I mean, it's something Jagex could do, but I don't think there's the resources and time to do it. So.
Would I have liked extra consequences? What kind of consequences?
I would have liked.
I think allegiances is the only thing you can really have. But, you know, you can't say that either you like Ceridomin or not. Or rather, Ceridomin either likes you or not. And then you have a quest about Ceridomin, and for half the players, it's super easy because Ceridomin is there as an ally, and then the other it isn't. You have to replace Ceridomin with someone else to keep it fair for everyone. And you see,
and at that point, sort of you'd be making two quests. Yeah. If I could have done anything in this quest, I would have had Sliske killed off sooner. Like, permanently.
Yeah, I don't know. This is really difficult. I think the fact that we find it hard to come up with these things means that that is probably also why they were not there, because it's super hard to get to a consistent state in the end of the quest. I can't really think of a game that does this better either.
Because the stone would have had to have been destroyed regardless.
Yeah. What would have been interesting if the stone would have been destroyed in different ways, right?
Okay.
What if I could have made the choice to destroy the stone myself? Or what if Seven had won? I don't know. Seven would have destroyed the stone.
Yeah, that would have been neat.
She does.
That would have been
neat. See, that way, everybody would have ended up in the same place, but in a different way based on their choices. I think that would have been better. Marginally, but it would have been better.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Because, I mean, Saren was, it just seemed like she didn't really have a stake in the stone, nor I don't think would she want one, right?
No.
And she was just there to, you know, play off Zaros to a degree, I feel. So it would have been a really interesting development if she did destroy the stone.
Yeah. Maybe Zaros would try to use the stone to become an Elder God. That goes wrong, the stone blows up.
There's another option right there.
See, like, that is, I think each of those is more satisfying than a Dragonkin rushing on and killing it.
But at the same time, we did get some of the Dragonkin story in the Sixth Age, and we know that the Stone of Jazz was essentially the ball and chain that kept the Dragonkin grounded and under control. And by destroying it, that effectively frees the Dragonkin.
Mm-hmm.
So that could very well be setting up future quests whenever we get there. In fact, it is probably.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it even a year and a bit later, it's still so hard to reconcile this quest, I find.
Agreed.
Like, it should have been great. It is great when we look at it from the lore perspective, but it just doesn't feel fulfilling.
I think that's a good way to summarize it.
Yeah. All right, and with that, hopefully we can close out this chapter on Sliske's endgame. So, all right. If you guys want to send your own questions in, email questions@rsbnb.com. We also take them via text or voicemail, 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. Or you can just get to us on Twitter at rsbnb, direct messages, at mentions, so on and so forth. You know, I'm sorry for being such a buzzkill on that, but I just feel like we're done at this point for Sliske's endgame, you know?
I could not agree more.
Yeah. Okie dokie. So, moving on into tech news this week. Facebook reported something absolutely astounding. Something that people, you know, probably were not expecting to happen on Facebook for, you know, a long time. Facebook reports that for the first time ever, they lost 1 million users in Canada and the United States. And
woohoo!
Exactly! And I mean, the headline is, from the Next Web, I salute the 1 million North Americans who ditched Facebook last quarter. And you know, they say it's not a huge drop in the grand scheme of things, even though that they increased by 32 million users overall in the last quarter. But it shows that people in North America, at least, are actively leaving Facebook and freeing themselves from it. And go ahead.
This is kind of surprising to me, right?
Oh, definitely.
Because. So I am not a Facebook user,
And
it's hard. It is actually kind of hard these days, which is exactly the reason why I'm not giving in, because...
If you give in, you become one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say them being like as a negative thing. I just don't like society being dependent on Facebook.
Yeah.
If Facebook went down, chaos would ensue, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because so many social things happen through Facebook these days and nothing else. That worries me, and I don't want to become dependent on that.
Exactly.
So that's my reason for not being on Facebook. But that's also exactly the reason why I'm surprised, because so many things are dependent on Facebook these days. Want to go to a party? It's a Facebook event. Want to keep in touch with friends? Use Facebook Messenger. I lost contact with a bunch of people I used to know because they switched to only using Facebook.
Oh.
And I refused to do that.
Oh.
And, you know, that's partly my fault because I don't want to go to Facebook and that's what everyone uses. So why are you not using it? But on the other hand,
you're free. You're free to maintain your own contacts.
But also, I don't want to be dependent on it. And,
exactly.
You know, I get a difficult discussion sometimes because people don't get that I don't want to have Facebook. And, but people are so dependent on it, and actively leaving it means giving all of that up. Right?
Yeah.
If all your friends plan all their parties on Facebook, they're not going to send you a separate invite because you're not on Facebook. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, who even uses
like, it's sad,
standard text messaging anymore?
No, exactly. So leaving Facebook either means it's not being used for that, but I don't believe that, or you're giving it up. And that's why 1 million people leaving really surprises me.
Because it's a big number.
Because you're stepping out of that group. So either that is a lot of people really disliking Facebook and willing to give this up, or the use and dependency on Facebook is dropping in those groups. But that's not a trend I have seen. So I suspect it's the former, which would be pretty big.
Yeah, I agree. The article postulates that it could be the rise of, quote, fake news or meddling by Russian agencies, and plenty of content in your feed that you don't remember subscribing to could all be to blame as to why people are stepping down from Facebook. And it also suspects it could be due to the fact that you don't know what's in your feed because, you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the show, Facebook wanting to surface more content from your contacts instead of from brands and publishers. So, I don't know. Maybe.
You know what I think the big problem with Facebook might be?
What's that?
All right. What is Apple's mission?
To make simple, easy to use pieces of hardware that integrate nicely with pieces of software that they make.
What is Google's mission?
To surface and provide quick and easy access to all the information in the world.
What's Facebook's mission?
You want the mission that people think or the actual mission?
Either.
I think Facebook's internal mission is to know everything about everyone who uses their platform and make money.
And they have not convinced us that it's otherwise. Never. And I think that's a big problem with Facebook as a platform. I mean, the external action is they want to connect people, right?
Yeah.
They want to become the social network.
But I have a contact list in my phone of people I want to talk to that has email addresses.
Yeah, it's also the features they release don't seem to actively support that use case.
Unless you use Messenger.
Yeah. So, you know, that is why Facebook is not convincing. I don't think it's like not. I don't believe that that companies are benevolent per se.
I completely agree with you on that.
But Facebook?
I mean, all you need to do is see the amount of tracking that they run.
Exactly. So, you know, that is.
It's the evil empire.
Yeah. That is sort of my problem with Facebook as well, and I think that's sort of dripping out.
They
just don't push out a strong vision of what they want to become. And they are surrounded by fake news problems and their subscriptions problems, and like they're not addressing it in a way that builds trust with their users.
Oh yeah, I know. And you know, when it comes to revenue, absolutely. Because I use Facebook for the other show, and you know, we post our news articles there and whatnot. And one thing that they're always asking for as a page is, please promote this. It'll cost you this amount of money, and it will reach this many people. So, you know, they definitely do want to go that way, but they're saying to the actual user base that they don't.
I think Facebook betted on short-term a lot.
Right.
Short-term growth, short-term and gains.
I think we'll see to look. Go ahead.
And now it's sort of that the longer term, like, it started to happen. Like, that's sort of where it falls down.
Yeah. I think we need to also look at the people who are just coming online right now. Like the people who are currently 12 to 19 in that age range. And are they using Facebook or are they using Snapchat, for example? How are they communicating with each other?
I have no clue because I have no one in my friend group of that age.
Exactly.
Gosh, when did that happen?
I would seriously like to go to a high school one day and run a survey. Do you guys use Facebook to talk to each other?
I think like Instagram is still doing really well.
Okay.
Which is Facebook, right? So.
But, like, let's go hang out at the mall. How do people communicate that these days? Let's go to a movie. I mean, I'm going to sound really old-fashioned, but I send an email to some people. Other people I'll call.
I send a text message. Or is it one of the 15 text message app that I have on my phone? I use WhatsApp. That's still a pretty big thing here, I think. But that's also declining.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Whoever thought getting old would have a problem with being disconnected from the young people?
Yeah, I thought that would never happen.
All right, well, let's be thankful for the people who did disconnect, because I know it's not an easy thing to do. Also this week in tech news, report surfaced that Apple could be potentially gearing up in the next or subsequent versions of iOS to allow people to run iPad apps on their Mac, which Google does with the Chromebooks already. So, interesting feature, I think.
I don't really know how Chromebooks do, to be honest, but
I know they're very popular in education.
From what I've seen, they're actually sort of working. And after the thing that happened with the Mac App Store, or rather the thing that didn't happen with the Mac App Store, this might not be a bad move.
Yeah, I agree. I like the idea of the Mac App Store when it came around. And there are a lot of the apps I used on the Mac, you know, back in the day, Tweety, which became Twitter for Mac. Also ScreenFlow, which I used to capture video for the podcast. Transmit, which is a FTP client from Panic. Coda, which is also a website builder from Panic. And a bunch of others, really. You know, these all used to be on the Mac App Store. But since then, all of these applications have moved to their own distribution mechanisms and have provided ways in software to say, okay, you bought this on the Mac App Store. If you want to change this in for a real license from our website, you can do that. Mm. And, you know, I have found myself doing that for a good portion of these.
I've done it with 1Password, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one as well, 1Password. And, you know, it just feels like a more natural experience. And the Mac App Store, I don't think, ever took off. And if you look at what's on there, it is full of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't take off like the iOS App Store. And I think rather than trying to fix
it. If you look at the Microsoft Store, that took 3 tries to get right.
Yeah. But even then, are people going to use that on Windows?
I think very few people use it.
Exactly. So, and the reason for the Microsoft App Store is novel because there are the combined applications that you can run on Surface, Xbox, and PC now, and previously Windows Phone.
Mm-hmm.
Than you get from the App Store.
See, I don't use my Mac that much anymore, but I use Homebrew for a lot of stuff.
Right.
Which is like a command line tool, which is like basically your apt-get for Mac. So that is something I do for a lot of things. For a lot of things, I just download them, I think.
Yeah.
Which is what you would do for Windows as well. You just download the setup.exe and hope it's not a virus or something. I don't know.
True. You know, it was initially...
That is something you would get out of an app store, I guess. Like, it's protected.
Yeah.
Because it's a secure connection, but you know, I use lots of open source stuff. Well, try getting on the App Store as an open source project. I don't think it's very easy.
Nope.
I think you need a license and you need to renew it every year. Like,
oh, you do need to renew it every year. It's really annoying.
I just bought my VLC player. That's an open source thing. I just want to have that on my Mac.
Yeah.
And I watched Sublime Text, which is not open source, but
Yeah.
I just want like simple applications like that. And those,
they're just easier to download and they're there.
Yeah, but the App Store is just not accessible to developers either.
Yep, I will agree with that 110%. I mean, you want to put out a new version, they got to review it. And I mean, that's fine and everything. But still, it's not as simple as just, you know, finishing it, uploading it to a website and away you go.
I mean, we're talking about the Chromebooks, right? Those use the Play Store, I assume?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Do you know how you get on the Play Store?
I'd imagine it's simpler than the iOS store.
You pay a one-time $25 fee.
Per app or just in general?
Nope, just for an account.
Ooh.
And then you upload your app. And then it goes to a review. That takes about 2 hours. It's all automated. And then you have your app on the Play Store. That's it.
Yep. Okay. I think we can see what's happening here. Apple definitely will want to get rid of the App Store on Mac.
This is the eternal debate, right? Why the App Store for Mac has high quality apps while the Android App Store is full of trash. But I have an Android phone and I don't think the apps are trash. So either Google did something right in automatic stuff detection, or they just surface the right apps. But like, I don't find one App Store particularly better than the other, but the Mac App Store is definitely the least of all of them from what I've used.
Yeah. Like, for example, right here, just having a look here at the top apps right now on the App Store for Mac, there's an application called Magnet, which effectively allows you to organize your Windows on the Mac so that they are, you know, in a nice grid, which you can't do built into the OS.
Which is, I use an open source thing for that, yeah. I think.
Guess how much that costs you?
I've seen it. I think it's like $8.
No, it's 99 cents American.
Oh, okay.
The next one is a note-taking app called Notability for $14.
Use a text editor?
No, the idea behind this is that it can sync with iCloud, and you can use your Apple Pencil on your iOS device.
Oh, okay.
To interact. Yeah.
Use the Notes app?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But this looks more kind of like a OneNote kind of thing. But it's also worth saying you can get OneNote for free on all these platforms as well.
Yeah, you know, this is what I've become used to.
Daisy Disk is also here. Apparently that's a paid app. I thought that was free. I thought I bought that for free. Interesting. Notes for Google Keep is also here as a paid app on the top one. And Logic Pro 10 from Apple round out the top five, with Final Cut Pro being at 6. Then for free apps, you have GarageBand, WhatsApp, Open Any File, Xcode, and Microsoft Remote Desktop in the top five. And number 6 is OneDrive.
Is that the official WhatsApp app?
Looks like it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Looks like
Yeah.
And this goes back to the last one. I mean, why do you need Facebook if you can just use WhatsApp?
Mm.
So, I mean, as you can see here, like the top paid ones are good. But if you go into any of the subcategories here, you're going to find lots of junk. So, I don't know. Initially, this was supposed to come out in iOS 12 later this year, but it has been apparently pushed back to iOS 13 in 2019 because they want to focus on usability and stability in iOS 12 this year.
That might potentially be too late, but yeah. I don't know. Hopefully we'll see a turnaround, because I think it needs more love. I think the Mac App Store could work if it did the things right.
Yeah, and plus, I mean, it would also be good for developers if they can just write once and get it out to all the app stores, right? And then just tick a box if you don't want it on iPad or Mac. Mm-hmm. All right, final piece of tech news. Nintendo Switch's online paid service will be arriving this September for around 20 euros for a year's subscription. So I think that would put us at about, what, probably $25 American for an entire year?
Usually it's 1-1. Okay. Because American prices are usually excluding taxes. So.
All right.
Probably $20 plus taxes.
8 euros for 3 months or 4 euros for 1 month. UK price is not announced yet. The idea behind this is it'll be like Xbox Live where you'll be able to play online on your Switch, but you'll also get access to a library of classic Nintendo games, including Super Mario Bros. 3, Balloon Fight, and Dr. Mario. And I mean, of course, they could go further and keep adding to this just like we had with Xbox Game Pass as well. And I think $20 for a year is a pretty good price to be able to get access to all these on your Switch, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds like a reasonable price. Like 4 euros a month.
That's RuneScape.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends how much you use your Switch as well, I suppose. It depends what the other perks are going to be. I think there was talk at some point that the NES games they would release would only be there for 1 month and then go away again. I think they got back from that and they will now stay available, but like, I think it's really hard to judge until we see how exactly this is going to pan out. I have mixed feelings about this whole subscription things. I think you buy a console, there should be a basic level of service to it, and online play should be part of that service.
Yeah.
But, I mean, consoles these days are basically sold at cost price because that's what customers have come to expect. And it's a one-time thing. You they sell it once and then they can't get any profit on it at all anymore. So I can sort of see how the developers are trying to sort of turn this into long-term revenue.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing that would ultimately sell this is if they added, you know, more classic games to it, like N64 games and more Super Nintendo games. I think that would definitely be a seller for a lot of people.
I mean, imagine buying a full-priced game. Like, I don't understand. If you don't pay for this, does that mean you can't play any games online?
Unknown, but I would assume that would be the case because they are calling it Nintendo Switch Online. And
that is like buying a full-price game on PC, and then if they're like, if you want to play this online, you have to pay 20 euros a year.
But unfortunately,
nobody would stand for that.
But unfortunately, that's how it works on Xbox, and lots of people do that.
Yeah, it feels a bit... Yeah, it is.
It's not Nintendo-like, but it's what the rest of the gaming industry does.
It is why the PC will come out on top.
Now, there's another way of looking at it. But you can't get your Mario on the PC then, can you?
Oh, but I can get Mario Kart on my phone soon enough.
Yes, in 2019. That'll be fun.
Yeah, that will be fun. I can go on the train and play Mario Kart and start swearing at my phone.
or hopefully by then you can go on your phone and start playing RuneScape and get PK'd in the wilderness and start swearing at your phone.
Yeah, I think my commute will become a lot more fun at that point. For some definition of fun.
Definition, yeah. All right. Well, that's it for tech news this week. We'll definitely have to wait to see what arrives with this in September, but who knows? Who knows? All right, so the month of January is over, and oh boy, what a skill of the month it was. You know, Sorensen 57 maintained a relatively low profile in the first half of the month, but took off like a rocket in the second half, gaining in total 47,089,348 experience this month in the Magic Skill of the Month. Parnassius was in second place with 17.9 million, and X-Blades was in third with 9.7 million XP. And we also have our skill of the month for February, which is Construction for Double XP Weekend. Not much uptake on that because, I mean, who wants to spend money on construction for a skilling competition, right?
Also, look at the price of mahogany logs right now.
Ooh, what's happening?
Well, that's probably still growing, right?
Yeah. Did you cash out?
I'm still holding on. I'm probably gonna. Yeah, I'm still holding on.
That's a nice little uptake right there.
Yeah.
That's just like what magic logs used to be, except you don't need to spend hours and hours getting to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, let's go through some achievements then. Starting off on the 31st of January, Touchpad Pro got 120 Herblore. 1, 2, 3, 4 were cool, got 99 defense also on the 31st. Elysian got 99 summoning on the 31st. Now on the 30th, we have Luke Totodile with 120 fishing, Snowlight with 99 fire making. Now on the January 29th, we have Derpanu with 120 Slayer, Touchpad Pro with 120 Crafting, 1, 2, 3, 4 were cool with 99 Strength on the 29th, were cool again with 99 Attack on the 29th, and now on to the 28th, we have CQ Sethron with 99 Crafting and 99 Cooking, Trips Travis with 99 Magic, and CQ Sethron again with 99 Hunter and Agility on the 27th, and Delandra EST with 120 Invention on the 27th. I kind of cannibalized those for you, but I'll let you have the rest. I thought we had a longer list than that this week.
Illness got 120 Invention on January 26th, and AC Ferro also got 99 Ranged on January 26th. And finally, on January 25th, we have 99 Engineering and 99 Fletching from AC Ferro, and Noxbow getting 99 Divination.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. All right. What do you got for pick of the week?
I picked an app that I have been using for what must be almost a year now. It's called Loop Habit Tracker. It's a very specific app. It's on the Play Store. It's open source, which I like. It doesn't have ads, which I like. But there's plenty of alternatives if you want to have a different kind of habit tracker. What I do want to talk about is what it does and why it helped me. So Habit Tracker is a super simple app that is basically a bunch of checkboxes that we set at midnight every day. Now, you can set goals for each of them. So I have a goal that I want to be outside at least once every day, which might sound like a stupid goal. But if you're like me and like programming and all that stuff, it's easy to stay an entire weekend inside, which is not very healthy. So the app helped me keeping track of going outside every day. And it keeps like statistics. So you can look at your history and see how you're doing and see how you're improving over time. And it has helped me change my habits. I have stopped drinking soda a lot. I have started eating fruit more. My dentist is complaining less about my lack of flossing. All that stuff is sort of something I've started doing because I kept track of it. And we're now in February, which is the second month of January. So there might have been some resolutions that either you succeeded or failed already. And like maybe you can pick up some habits. I think it's also a really natural way to grow into habits. Like you don't do it often enough, you can sort of ease into it. So yeah, for me, it has really helped to track, like to sort of change my behavior in a natural and healthy way. So yeah, something like that might be worth giving a try if that's what you want to do.
I wonder if someone could use this to quit smoking.
I mean, it depends. I'm not entirely sure how quitting smoking, what like the best practices are for that. It is also not something I would recommend doing from one to the other day. Right? It's something you should naturally grow into.
Oh, okay.
It's like the going outside, right? So I started doing walks on like Sundays, and I started doing things on Saturdays. Like I sort of moved my way into getting to this weekly goal by sort of slowly increasing my score. It saved it like soda, right? I used to drink soda almost every day. Then I moved it to like once every other day. And then now I am allowed to drink it twice a week, but I drink it much less than that. So like you sort of, it's more something you slowly ease into. Because, and that's the problem with resolutions, right?
It's January 1st, you got to do it.
If you jump into something, it's not going to last.
Yeah, but precisely.
The habits that I've created with this do last. And if I have a particularly bad period, right, I notice it and I become aware of doing things badly and I can
catch it. And you can reform yourself based on that. Mm-hmm. Right, and there's an example here showing best streaks. You can see. You know, you might have had something else going on during that week that influenced that, and you can say, okay, next week we're going to be better on this then. So
So for a while, I was doing really well on learning a new language, which I did every day like a tiny bit. Currently, my score is really low on that because I'm not doing it, so I need to start working on that. But I'm currently working on other things, so like I pick one thing at a time and sort of try to increase it. But yeah, I think it has improved my life. It sounds big, but it has improved my life in small ways that together add up to something significant. And above it all, it also means you feel good for doing all these things.
Yeah.
So and that's important.
So it's just called Loop Habit Tracker. And, you know, we were talking in pre-show about this. This is another reason where Android supersedes iOS, and that's the home screen.
Yeah, because I have a bunch of tick boxes on my home screen, and like when I am in the train in the morning, like I tick a few boxes. When I'm on the train home, I tick a few other boxes. When I go to bed, I tick hopefully the remaining boxes. Usually not, but like it's really easy to get. I don't have to open the app, right? You can just do it in the home screen and again enable them, and you can even set up goals for like once a week or twice a week, right? Because sometimes you have to do only once a week, but it will still keep track of that and sort of show you when you have to do it again. So yeah, it's a good simple app.
And it is not available on iOS for obvious reasons.
But like that's what I said. I chose this particular app because that's what happened to be recommended, but that's probably alternative to do the exact
same
thing.
One actually looks really good based on what you said and what your initial requirements were. So let's run with it. All right, that's Loop Habit Tracker. So what have you been up to on RS since we last heard from you?
Since you last heard from me, I think it would be the same answer if you asked it last week because basically nothing. I sort of moved away from doing anything for a specific reason. Mm-hmm. And that might sound stupid, but I am at this point in the game where my requirements are combat, grindy, RNG-based. I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was like, all right, today is going to happen. I'm going to do a Platinum Challenge, Rush of Blood, get to Wave 20, get that requirement done. And I did it. I was hating it. I was swearing, and I just didn't like it. I was like, screw it. I'm not having fun this way. So I stopped doing that. I was like, I'm just going to do, I don't know, whatever I want to do. So I do dailies. I run around. I check things. I don't even know what I do in game. I just spend some time there, whatever I feel like doing every day. And if it helps me towards my goals, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I get not enough time to play RuneScape to do things I don't like doing. Basically.
Yeah. I mean, why do it if you don't like doing it in that case?
Why do it? What am I going to really get out of getting that completionist cape or master quest cape? I'll get there eventually because there will be times where I feel like working towards those goals and I will do it. Until then, I'll just make the best of the game. And it sounds
Yeah, that's it sounds odd, but that's the way I think people should play.
Sometimes I stand in the bank and talk to people. I don't know. I think it should be a game you enjoy and not throwing at the screen because you get yet another torment and demon spawn.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it works. It works.
All right. As for me this week, I replayed the quest twice, did some fishvention, and I did the monthly oyster thing. I think I got around a 600 or 700k value, which is fine, right? That's like a U composite bow, I think, according to the GE value. So I'll be happy with that. But that's about it this week. I don't think there was much else. Definitely interesting to see what's ahead in February, but I don't think there's much else for us to say on this episode, is there?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, with that being said, thank you everyone for joining us for this episode of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week with all of that February has to offer for us. And remember, in the meantime, if you want to chat with us in-game, we're at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. And we'll see you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.